So our speaker tonight returns back to the parish. He was pastor here at Queen of All Saints from 2003 until 2008.
Say that again.
Pastor here at Queen of All Saints?
When?
2003 to 2008? No.
From
97. Yeah. Right, 97. I don't know what to think of 2003 for. Those are the years when I wasn't coming to church, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, he did. He said that like, I mean, it was a bad memory he had here. I don't know. He looked at some of the faces and the feelings came back. I'm not too sure. So 97 to 2007 for 10 years, and he's back here. He is now in Mermentau. Mermentau is blessed to have him at St. John the Evangelist Church, and there's a mission church, St. Margaret of Scotland.
Estherwood.
In Estherwood. That's in Estherwood. And so Father Mauro was here tonight to talk to us on the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And he'll speak to us appropriately enough about Our Lady of Guadalupe. So would everyone please give us a nice rousing welcome back for our former pastor.
Somebody commented that I said it like it was a bad thing. That I was, no, it was a great thing. I was very happy here and so sad I had to leave. And it's kind of bittersweet, you know, when I come back for anything, because believe it or not, I do miss y'all. And you know, when I come back and I get to see everybody, it's wonderful, and then I have to leave again. And I love it where I'm at. Let me just say this. I love Mermentau and Estherwood. I'm very, very happy there. And I hope that I can stay there and be healthy enough to stay there for many years. But I do miss y'all. I've been gone, believe it or not, for 9.5 years. Think about that. I've been gone for that long. It's hard to believe. Where has the time gone? So I'll move that thing over to the side. Is that okay? I don't know. I hope it turns off. But no, it's very good to be here tonight with y'all. Thank you for the invitation. And I'm happy especially to be talking about Our Lady of Guadalupe. I love Our Lady, period, right? And I love Our Lady of Guadalupe. I have been very blessed to have visited the shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City many times. Anybody else here has, raise your hand if you visited the shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So a few of y'all have, huh? I've been many, many, many times. I'm gonna kind of explain, give a little, hope you don't mind. I asked how long I was supposed to talk, and then I realized as long as I feel like talking, right? So I don't know how long this thing's gonna last, whatever. But just a little bit of personal stuff, why this feast is so important to me and why it's a great privilege for me to be able to speak about her. The first time I visited the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is in the northern part of Mexico City, I was a college seminarian. I was studying in Irving, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas, at Holy Trinity Seminary. Can y'all understand me? The acoustics, am I speaking too quickly? No? Okay. What? Okay, thank you. I had gone on a, we had a, you know, week off every now and then, and three other seminarians and I, we drove down to Laredo, and we took a train, which was fascinating, a train through Mexico to Mexico City, and we stayed for a week and in Mexico City and toured all over the place. And one of the places, of course, we went to was the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I remember being amazed by several things when I was there. First of all, one of the things that struck me is there's a big plaza, and on the, as you enter the plaza, there's the new basilica is on the left over there, and there's a gate, big iron fence around it, a gate. And there were these Mexican women in skirts or dresses, whatever, but they would kind of, you know, pull them up above their knees and crawl on their knees from the gate on this stone type pavement from the gate to the basilica. I just stayed in my mind. I remember that. It was just so devout, huh? I don't know where that tradition comes from, but I remember seeing that and just being amazed at their devotion. The beautiful, simple faith of the Mexican people has always impressed me. I'll share. I was in Mexico other times, but just such a beautiful, simple faith. Whenever I would go into the Mexicans' homes, and I've been to Mexico many, many times, when I was here, I would take some mission trips into Mexico. And I mean, all of these homes have multiple pictures, every home, every Catholic home, multiple pictures of Our Lady of Guadalupe. They love Our Lady of Guadalupe. And this amazing tilma, I'm going to talk a lot more about in a moment, that you get to, you can't stand in front of it anymore. They have this little conveyor belt. You go and you, it makes you just keep passing in front. So if you want to get a better look, you got to keep going around and around. But this magnificent tilma that's there. But most especially, I remember the first time I went, and then subsequent times I went as a seminarian. I remember looking around the new modern basilica and seeing, like when you walk in from the back, that being the back over there, walk in and go in far enough and you turn around, and across the back, it's a huge basilica, across the back there are a bunch of little chapels up on a second level. And I remember thinking, now I'm an old man now, so this was a long time ago, but I remember thinking, gosh, when I was a seminarian, I would love to go back one day as a priest and say Mass in one of those little chapels up there. Say a prayer. That was like a dream and a goal. Well, I went to the shrine again when I lived in Mexico one summer while I was studying at Notre Dame Seminary in New Orleans. And I was there with another seminarian. And the little village we lived in was called Temascalapa. You'll have to remember this. It's going to be a test at the end. Temascalapa. And Temascalapa was, I guess, if I remember correctly, this was 30-something years ago, but I think it was about maybe 30 miles north of Mexico City. So it was real close. And since it was so close, we went almost every week to the shrine. And we would take a bus. There was another little town a few miles away that was on the main road. And they would drive us to the main road there, and we would catch the Flecha Roja, it was called. I'll never forget the name. Well, I don't know. The Red Arrow. And we would take the Flecha Roja by ourselves, and we didn't speak Spanish, but we made it, into Mexico City. And we would go to the basilica almost every week. And again, I would see those little chapels. We'd pray, of course, and go to Mass. And I always wanted to go back and say Mass in one of those small chapels. Well, my dream came true. As a priest, I have been to the shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, I think twice as a priest, but I'm not sure. I think it's at least twice, with Father Michael Russo. Some of y'all might know who Father Michael Russo is. He's the pastor of Our Lady of Fatima Parish in Lafayette. And we were able to say Mass, a tremendous privilege, just the two of us, but say Mass at one of these little chapels in the basilica. And I remember just feeling almost euphoric. It was such a wonderful feeling that this dream that I had of doing this, a dream came true. And the first time we went, I don't remember what year that was. We were young priests at the time. The priest living at the shrine of the basilica invited us to a meal. Here we were, strangers from another country, and here these priests seeing us there and saying Mass and all, they invited us to join them for a meal. And it gave me a sense of this great fraternity that we have as priests. Made me feel this. This is a great, great organization, you call it a fraternity as priests, that these priests invite these strange priests from another country to just share a meal with them. It was a wonderful experience. The last time we went, this was just a few years ago, I remember, I don't know where Father Russo had gone, but I was standing in the middle of this plaza by myself, waiting for him. And this Mexican lady walked up to me. Now, there were not a lot of people in the plaza at the time, so I'm standing there right in the middle, kind of by myself. And this Mexican woman walked up to me, started speaking Spanish. Now, I speak a little Spanish, not a lot. I think she was asking me the time. I don't remember. And now, keep in mind, I'm in a foreign country, right? And I don't speak the language very well. And we're standing there, and after just a few seconds, she collapsed. Just collapsed right in front of me on the Sun Plaza. What am I going to do? I had no idea what to do. I couldn't check and see what was wrong with her. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. And I couldn't, like, hey, you know, call out to somebody and explain anything. So I tried to get somebody's attention. And somebody eventually came over, and they have some kind of a basilica policeman or something. And eventually somebody came over, and I was panicking. So when people started kind of gathering around, I hope I didn't do anything wrong, but I just kind of backed off and left. Now, I don't think that, you know, I mean, I wasn't worried because there were basilica priests there, you know, so if she needed a priest, they could have gotten a priest, right? But to this day, I have no idea if she lived or died. No idea. That's very sad, I know, but I didn't know what to do. Panicked. I'm sorry for taking this time to tell you these personal stories, but I wanted you to know why Our Lady of Guadalupe and her shrine is so important to me. Now, I mean, I love Our Lady, as you all do, and I mean, being here at Our Lady, Queen of All Saints, was also very special, but it was just, I've had so many wonderful experiences in Mexico. Now, we try to get to the meat of the talk. I had a dilemma as I was preparing this talk. As I was doing my research, I came across two beautiful narrations of the story. And I said, you know, they do, it's written so beautifully. I said, I'm just going to read it to y'all, two of them. So if it's boring or if it doesn't make much sense or if it's too much repetition, I'm very sorry, but too bad. I'm not your pastor, and you can't do anything about it anyhow. But they were both so beautiful. So anyhow, this is how one of them goes. The opening of the new world. Now, keep in mind, the opening of the new world. She appeared in 1531. And Columbus landed in, what, 1492, right? So less than 40 years, right? Is my math okay there? Is anybody? So what, 39 years? That's pretty close to the opening of the new world. Brought with it both fortune seekers and religious preachers, desiring to convert the native populations to the Christian faith. Let me be a little bit more specific, to the Catholic faith, okay? This is right at the time, believe it or not, at the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. And they were all Catholic. When Columbus, by the way, you know, they were Catholic priests on the ships, because they were coming not only to discover, but to bring the Catholic faith to the New World. That's you don't hear that in the history books, but that is the truth. One of the converts was a poor Aztec Indian named Juan Diego. On one of his trips to the chapel, Juan was walking through the Tepeyac Hill country in central Mexico. Near Tepeyac Hill, he encountered a beautiful woman surrounded by a ball of light as bright as the sun. Speaking in his native tongue, the beautiful lady identified herself. "My dear little son, I love you. I desire you to know who I am. I am the ever-Virgin Mary, mother of the true God, who gives life and maintains its existence. He created all things. He is in all places. He is Lord of heaven and earth. I desire a church in this place where your people may experience my compassion. All all those who sincerely ask my help in their work and in their sorrows will know my mother's heart in this place. Here I will see their tears. I will console them, and they will be at peace. So run now to Tenochtitlan. I don't know if that's correct, but it's something like that. And tell the bishop all that you have seen and heard. Now this was on December the 9th, first time she appeared of 1531. Now Juan, age 57, who had never been to this place where the bishop was, nonetheless immediately responded to Mary's request. He went to the palace of the bishop, Fray Juan de Zumarraga, and requested to meet immediately with the bishop. Picture this for a minute. A poor Mexican Aztec convert to Catholicism is going to the bishop's palace and wants to see the bishop right away. Right. The bishop's servants, who were suspicious of the rural peasant, kept him waiting for hours. The bishop told Juan that he would consider the request of the lady and told him he could visit him again if he so desired. In other words, well, I'll think about it. Come back later. Juan was disappointed by the bishop's response and felt himself unworthy to persuade someone as important as the bishop. He returned to the hill where he had first met Mary and found her waiting there for him, imploring her to send someone else. She responded, "My little son, there are many I could send, but you are the one I have chosen." She then told him to return the next day to the bishop and repeat the request. On Sunday, after again waiting for hours, Juan met with the bishop, who, on rehearing his story, asked him to ask the lady to provide a sign as a proof of who she was. So he went the next day, and the bishop said, "Okay, look, you're persistent, get a sign." Juan dutifully returned to the hill and told Mary, who was again waiting for him there, of the bishop's request. Mary responded, "My little son, am I not your mother? Do not fear. The bishop shall have his sign. Come back to this place tomorrow. Only peace, my little son." Now, unfortunately, Juan was not able to return to the hill the next day. His uncle had become mortally ill. He was dying. And Juan stayed with him to care for him. After 2 days, so he missed one day, with his uncle near death, Juan left his side to find a priest. Juan had to pass Tepeyac Hill to get to the priest. He actually went around to try to not to see her, because he was in a hurry to get a priest to go see his uncle. As he was passing, he found Mary waiting for him. She spoke, "Do not be distressed, my little son. Am I not here with you, who am your mother? Are you not under my shadow and protection? Your uncle will not die at this time. There is no reason for you to engage a priest, for his health is restored at this moment. Go to the top of the hill and cut the flowers that are growing there. Bring them then to me." So she said, "Don't worry, your uncle's well, he's cured. Go get flowers up at the top of the hill." Well, it was freezing on the hillside, middle of December. This was, let's see, the first day, the 9th, he went. Okay, she appeared to him. The 10th, again, he went to the bishop. Didn't go the 11th. Now this is the 12th, the day. Freezing. Juan obeyed Mary's instructions and went to the top of the hill, where he found a full bloom of Castilian roses. Removing his tilma, a poncho-like cape made of cactus flower, he cut the roses and carried them back to Mary. Put them in his tilma. She rearranged the roses and told him, "My little son, "This is the sign I am sending to the bishop. Tell him that with this sign, I request his greatest efforts to complete the church I desire in this place. Show these flowers to no one else but the bishop. You are my trusted ambassador. This time, the bishop will believe all you tell him." At the palace, Juan once again came before the bishop and several of his advisors. He told the bishop his story and opened the tilma, letting the flowers fall out. But it wasn't the beautiful roses that caused the bishop and his advisors to fall to their knees. For there on the tilma was a picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary, precisely as Juan had described her. The next day, after showing the tilma at the cathedral, Juan took the bishop to the spot where he first met Mary. He then returned to his village where he met his uncle, who was completely cured. His uncle told them he had met a young woman surrounded by a soft light, who told him that she had just sent his nephew to Tenochtitlan with a picture of herself. She told his uncle, "Call me and call my image Santa Maria de Guadalupe." It is believed that the word Guadalupe was actually a Spanish mistranslation of the local Aztec dialect. The word that Mary probably used was Coatalope, which means one who treads on snakes. Isn't that interesting, huh? Things, makes you think of the book of Genesis. Within six years of this apparition, 6 million Aztecs had converted to Catholicism. You think about that for a minute. The tilma shows Mary as the God-bearer. She is pregnant with her divine son. I'm going to have a really detailed explanation of the tilma in just a moment. Since the time the tilma was first impressed with a picture of the Mother of God, it has been subject to a variety of environmental hazards, including smoke from fires and candles, water from floods and torrential downpours, and in 1921, a bomb which was planted by anti-clerical forces on an altar under it. There was also a cast iron cross next to the tilma. And when the bomb exploded, the cross was twisted out of shape, the marble altar rail was heavily damaged, and the tilma was untouched. Indeed, no one was injured in the church despite the damage that occurred to a large part of the altar structure. In 1977, the tilma was examined using infrared photography and digital enhancement techniques. Unlike any painting, the tilma shows no sketching or any sign of outline drawn to permit an artist to produce a painting. Further, the very method used to create the image is still unknown. Kind of reminds you of the Shroud of Turin, huh? Unknown, can't figure it out. The image is inexplicable in its longevity and method of production. It can be seen today in a large cathedral built to house up to 10,000 worshipers. It is by far the most popular religious pilgrimage site in the Western Hemisphere. Now, what I decided to do, I just made an executive decision. I can do that. The second account is similar, but it has a few extra details. I'm going to hold that to the end if there's time. Now, let me give you some facts about the tilma itself. And what I did was, when I got this, I took a picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe that I had in my parish hall. And it's kind of a small image. But I went through each one of those things, and sure enough, only one of them I couldn't find, only because the image I have was too small. But listen to this. Okay, Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared to Juan Diego on September 9th, 10th, and 12th, 1531. The image left on St. Juan Diego's tilma is the only true picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe in existence. Now listen to this. The image has remained intact with all its original vibrancy for, well, what, since 1531. So by when this article was written, 475 years, but more, okay. Wow. The natural lifespan of a cloak made with fiber from the agave or maguey plant is only about 30 years. Think about it. That's the natural lifespan of something made from that fiber. The image is a pictograph which could be read and understood by Aztec Indians. So specific images there understood by the Aztecs. Our Lady appears as a beautiful young Indian maiden and queen. Her eyes are looking down with humility and compassion. She's human, not God. She is wearing a blue-green mantle, the color worn by royalty, covered with stars. You've seen an image, you can kind of picture. The stars signify she comes from heaven, the queen of heaven. The constellations are in the exact position as appeared before dawn on the morning of December 12, 1531. Go figure, huh? Her robe is colored rose or pale red and covered with Aztec flowers, symbolic of an Aztec princess. In the center of her robe, overlying her womb, so right in this area, and there it's there, I saw it, is a four-petal flower in the shape of a cross, which is the sign of the divine and the center of the cosmic order to the Aztec. The Virgin's baby Jesus is divine, of course, and the new center of the universe. Her hands are joined in prayer, and therefore she is not God, but clearly there is one greater than she, and she points her finger to the cross on her brooch, which is, it's around her neck. And I that's the one thing, the image I saw was too small for me to actually identify the cross. There's supposed to be a cross on the brooch around her neck. Her fur cuffs symbolize royalty. She wears a black maternity band, signifying she is with child. A black cross is on the brooch around her neck. This signifies she is a follower of the God of the Spanish missionaries, Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for all of us. She stands in front of the sun. The sun symbolizes the greatest Aztec god. She announces the God who is greater than their sun god. Okay, so imagine she's saying, this God that I am announcing is greater than your God. She stands on the moon. The crescent moon symbolized the Aztec god Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent moon god. She has clearly crushed and defeated him. An angel with eagle's wings supports the mother of God. The eagle was the bird of the sun. Here the eagle is the servant of the Virgin. She holds her mantle in one hand and robe with the other, signifying the sun she bears is both from heaven and earth. To date, the image cannot be explained by science. The image on the tilma was able to do what up to that time the missionaries were not able to do significantly, namely, clearly explain Christianity to the Indian people. The proof is in the fact that after the apparitions, and here this figure they give here is 8 million natives of Mexico converted to Catholicism between the years 1531 and 1538. Extraordinary, isn't it? It's fascinating. So if you ever have a chance to go to Mexico City, and visit this temple, this shrine of Our Lady, it's a wonderful experience, and I strongly encourage you to go if your health and your pocketbooks will allow it. Now, I was also told when I was preparing for this talk, or before, whenever Nick asked me to give this talk, hold on. I was supposed to explain the apparition and the tilma, and then also show its relevance to the world now. Is that right? Yeah. Well, that's the next part, second half. Pope St. John Paul II called all the faithful to participate in a new evangelization in our world. I want you to be thinking, okay, what does that have to do with Our Lady of Guadalupe? Well, talk about an evangelizer, huh? This apparition and its meaning to the Aztec people brought about a tremendous evangelization to the Aztec and then Mexico on down, Central South America, huh? Millions within a few years were converted. Pope St. John Paul II said on December the 13th, 1987, it was a great year, that's the year I was ordained, quote, Our Lady of Guadalupe continues to be a great sign of Christ's nearness to us today. She extends an invitation to all men and women to enter into communion with the Father. At the same time, Mary encourages all of us to enter into greater communion with one another. She will show us, who belong to the Church, the best way to carry out this awesome task we are entrusted with. That's evangelization. We implore from her the grace to dedicate ourselves with renewed missionary zeal to this sublime undertaking. That's very relevant to our world today, this new evangelization. He goes on, we need to trust that Mary will show us the most efficacious way of drawing our friends closer to God, since she herself will prepare them to receive the grace of God fruitfully. Now, can anyone here in church this evening deny that our world desperately needs a new evangelization? That is, needs to be brought closer to God, needs to know Jesus better, and needs to enter into a deeper, more intimate relationship with Him. Can anyone here deny that? Probably not, huh? And you wouldn't be willing to admit it anyhow right now, maybe privately. No, it's true. I mean, look at our world. Talk about need for a new evangelization. And the Pope is saying Mary is the key. Now, let's look at our world just for a second. All the major problems we face, from the rise of radical Islam and the violence that its adherents cause, to religious indifference, so much religious indifference, even amongst Catholics and other Christians, to extreme poverty in some parts of the world and rampant materialism and indifference here in the U.S. and other first world countries, to global acceptance of grossly immoral acts, not the fact that they're being done, it's all they've always been done, the acceptance across the globe of grossly immoral acts. I'm going to name a few. Surprise, surprise. Abortion has to be first on the list. But think about it. Homosexual activity is accepted and encouraged now. Contraception, sterilization, divorce and remarriage outside of the church, euthanasia, sex change operations, pornography, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. These things are just have become accepted. In regards to Islam, remember, I want you to remember something. If you didn't know it, you'll learn it. It was the rosary prayed by many thousands of Catholics that enabled the smaller Christian fleet to defeat the much larger Muslim fleet at the Battle of Lepanto on October the 7th, 1571, 40 years after Mary appeared to Juan Diego. The Pope encouraged Catholics throughout Europe to pray the rosary for victory. If you want to read a great novel about this, there is a novel by Louis de Wall, and The Last Crusader, it's called. And it's all about Blessed Juan. I think it's Juan, his name. What's his name? His full name. I'll think of it later. and he led the Christian fleet, but it's all about the history. It's a novel. It's wonderful about that. And it's the rosary. The Pope gave the credit to the thousands of Catholics throughout Europe praying the rosary that caused the small Christian fleet to defeat this large Muslim fleet. True story. Now, in regards to abortion, prior to Mary's apparition to Juan Diego, the Aztecs practiced human sacrifice, right? I think that's pretty widely known, which stopped, right, after their mass conversion to the Catholic faith. Now, listen to this beautiful pro-life prayer to Our Lady of Guadalupe I came across. Mary, Our Lady of Guadalupe, and patroness of the Americas. Our Lady of Guadalupe, patroness of all the Americas, North, South, and Central. You brought an end to the human sacrifices on the Aztec altars in the 16th century by means of your image on the cloak of Saint Juan Diego. So now we ask you to come to our aid and bring an end to the sacrificing of our preborn children on the altar of sexual excess and convenience. Bring us leaders who will respect life from the first moment of conception until natural death. Make them strong, honest, and moral men and women. And through their efforts, save our nation from moral annihilation and make us a culture of life. Holy Virgin of Guadalupe, Queen of Peace, save the nations and peoples of this continent. Amen. Isn't that beautiful? Beautiful prayer. So it's very, very relevant for us today to have a devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe, those of us who are pro-life, and see that as the highest priority, huh? Now let's look at our own local culture and communities. Many of these immoral activities I mentioned here a moment ago, have become accepted. This is what shocks me. I know out there, in some of these crazy places, but here, Catholic South Louisiana, I hear stories of Catholics attending and even participating in invalid marriages in increasing numbers, and Catholics and other Christians are attending and participating in so-called marriages of homosexuals. Catholics still divorce and remarry outside of the church, contracept, and are sterilized. I hear an alarming and increasing number of major problems in families and individuals' lives. Just an increasing number of major problems. Now, lest you think that it is only people out there, who need conversion and to be evangelized, what about us? Now, there's no doubt, I probably know most of you pretty well. Some of you very well. And you're good people. Very good people. Devout people. Especially after the 10 years I spent here, right? Just joking. But no, I mean, good, devout, wonderful people. But we all need conversion. But lest you think it's mostly people out there, how many, don't raise your hand and don't do this, but how many of you here right now in this sitting in this church listening to me ramble are now celebrating Christmas instead of Advent? Think about it. This is not the Christmas season. This is the Advent season. Right? But yet, how many people are celebrating Christmas? It's not Christmas yet. Think about that for a minute. Christmas begins for us with celebration, with the celebration of evening prayer, one of Christmas, but the celebration of the first Christmas Eve Mass, right? So we need to think about that. that's something we need to work on, right? How many of us here are ourselves materialistic? I'm guilty. I'm not happy about it. We indulge our selfish desires while neglecting the poor and needy. Poor and needy in our midst and throughout the world. So we all need ongoing conversion. I pray, I'm not joking when I say this. I pray for my own conversion every day. I do. My prayers don't seem to be working too well in that regard, but I'm not going to quit praying for it. Y'all think I'm kidding, but I'm very serious. We desperately need a new evangelization, and Mary can bring it about, as she did in Mexico in 1531, and the years following, as I said, when several million Aztecs and others were converted to the Catholic faith. Now, I am pretty sure that every one of us here very much wants a radical conversion of our society. Authentic devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, under the title of Our Lady of Guadalupe, patroness of the Americas, can and will show us how to bring about this conversion, if we let her. If we let her. It's one of the beautiful things about God, huh? And His mother and saints, they respect our freedom. They don't force us to do the right thing. We have to work with them, work with the grace. As Pope John Paul II said back in 1987, Mary will obtain for us the grace to work for this conversion, since Mary is what? The mediatrix of all graces, right? But not only will she obtain for us the graces to work hard and in the right way, but she can work directly on the souls of those needing to be evangelized. She can work through us and on them. Let me make special note of something Pope St. John Paul II said, though. We implore from her the grace to dedicate ourselves with renewed missionary zeal to this sublime undertaking. He's making it clear that it is we, all of us, who must be missionaries. We are the ones who must be evangelizing those around us, working to convert our society. We have to be doing it. We can't just pray our rosaries and sit back and hoping that Mary's going to do something, right? Work directly on their souls without our doing our own part in an active way. God, pray my rosary. Do something, Mary. No, we got to be doing our part, huh? We need to work for the evangelization and the conversion of ourselves and those around us. Ourselves first. We need to be doing sacrifice and penance, as the saints teach us, right? And giving alms. See, prayer, sacrifice, almsgiving. I've done this in this pulpit, just this very thing, many times. You know, people in the pulpit. The tripod, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving work together. You take one away, the tripod falls, right? So we do all three. We can be less materialistic. We can refuse to participate in immoral activities. I try to tell people, listen, when you go to these immoral activities and participate in them, you're only encouraging more and more people to do it instead of discouraging it. You're giving in, you're encouraging it more. We can encourage others with love, though with love. And sometimes we kind of, sometimes I don't always do it with as much love as I need to. I work on it. But encourage others to avoid such activities. And be willing to suffer for doing so. Because let's be honest, if we go against the culture and refuse to participate and agree with immoral activities, we're going to suffer. People are going to think we're cruel or mean or whatever. But we have to be willing to do it. See that up there? He died on a cross, right? We need God's grace, though, to be able to do this. And Mary obtains this grace for us. So as Our Lady of Guadalupe brought about the conversion of many millions in a very short time after her appearance, so she can bring about the conversion of many millions in our society and world. if we faithful Catholics implore her help and do our part. Now, if you doubt that she can do this, listen to what St. Thomas Aquinas said. It is wonderful for a saint to possess grace enough for the salvation of many other souls. Now think about the saints, man. They had so much grace, they were able to convert many, many people. Mary, however, is the greatest saint who has sufficient grace to save every other person in the world through her most intimate, co-redemptive union with her Son. Now, if this sounds extreme to you, remember, this is St. Thomas Aquinas, a doctor of the church, probably the greatest theologian who ever lived. You can't argue with him. Now, other relevant points to our world. One of the reasons that our world and local society needs a new evangelization is because we are experiencing a crisis of faith. I believe that firmly, a crisis of faith in our world, in our society. Even here, very Catholic, Christian, South Louisiana. So many people no longer believe in God or in Jesus or in His church or in the miraculous. They don't believe. More and more people think they have to understand something before they believe it or accept it. That's not belief. If you understand it, it's not belief. They reject God's teachings when they don't like them or when they conflict with the way they live or want to live. They no longer believe that Jesus founded a church to speak in His name, and that the Holy Spirit is in the church, protecting the church from error. Mary, Our Lady, is she who believed in the seemingly impossible. Seemed impossible, right? Imagine a 14-year-old Jewish virgin who was told by an angel that she was going to become the mother of the Messiah, who is also God. And she believed him. Imagine. How can this be, since I have no relations with a man? Not doubting, but so the angel explained. She teaches us to believe what God reveals, even though it may not make sense to us. But this crisis of faith can also, I think, be answered and can be addressed just by the fact of the Tilma. The miracle of the Tilma teaches us that only faith can explain its construction, how it came to be, right? And its continued existence today after almost 500 years since Mary gave it to us. The scientists can't explain it. Only faith. So we study these things and we look at it. And we say, okay, it's a strengthening. Our faith may not be based on that, but for the Aztecs, it was. Several million. Miracles are real and strengthen our faith. The reality of the miraculous Tilma is a great aid in overcoming the crisis of faith in our church and in our world. So I think Our Lady of Guadalupe, again, very relevant for our world, our society today, right? Now, another crisis we are facing in our society is the crisis of truth. The truth. Fewer and fewer people accept the truth. Fewer people are passionate about the truth. Fewer people seek to know the truth and strive to live by the truth. Heard that word, strive. Strive to live by the truth. I didn't say perfectly live by the truth, but are striving for it, passionately. More and more people give more importance to feelings rather than truth. Feelings do this, up and down, all over the place, right? People make moral choices and other choices according to what makes them feel good, rather than what is in accord with the truth. Jesus said, "The truth will set you free." And he said, "For this I was born, for this I came into the world, to bear witness to the truth." Mary is the answer. Think about that for a minute. How could Mary be the answer? Now, I'm going to tell you something that may shock many of you. And you may think, it's finally happened. Father Moro's gone off the deep end. We knew it was coming, and it's happened. But no, listen to this. Mary did the Father's will, and it is a greater thing for her that she was Christ's disciple than that she was his mother. It is a happier thing to be his disciple than to be his mother. Blessed then is Mary who bore the Lord in her body before she gave him birth. Now listen to this. Her mind was filled more fully with truth than her womb by his flesh. Her mind filled more fully with truth than her womb by his flesh. Christ is the truth. Christ is made flesh. Christ, the truth, is in Mary's mind. Christ made flesh is in her womb. Now listen to this. Greater is that which is in her mind than that which she carried in her womb. Sounds heretical, huh? It's like, whoa, you've gone up. In case you're wondering, I did not make this up. This is a direct quote from St. Augustine, another doctor of the church, and with St. Thomas Aquinas, one of the most brilliant and greatest theologians who ever lived. Isn't that interesting, huh? Greater is that which is in her mind, the truth, Christ is the truth, than that which she carried in her womb. If I hadn't read St. Augustine saying that, I would have said, that's extreme, but he said it. It's in the Liturgy of the Hours for the presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary on November the 21st. So Mary, Our Lady of Guadalupe, is the answer to the crisis of truth in our world. We need to turn to her to beg her to give us and our society a love and passion for the truth. It's desperately needed. I think, and I hope all of you here will agree with that, huh? We need to get back to the truth. I mentioned above that one of the major problems in our world and in our local society is materialism and neglect of the poor. When Mary appeared at Tepeyac Hill, to whom did she appear? A poor Aztec peasant convert. Mary, who was herself very poor, chose to reveal herself to a poor person just as she did at Fatima and Lourdes. Her choice of a lifestyle of poverty and of a poor Aztec peasant reminds us that value and happiness do not lie in having much money or material possessions, nor in power and prestige, nor in popularity and fame. What is truly valuable in the eyes of God is holiness. Uniting ourselves and our wills with the will of God. People often wonder why God does not hear and answer their prayers. People often wonder about that, huh? First of all, God always hears and answers our prayers, but not always in the way we want. Sometimes, like a good, loving parent, he says, no. You know, I buried my dad last year, in case y'all didn't know that. And my dad had perfected the art of saying no. It just rolled off his tongue like it just came naturally. He did it so beautifully and so easily. God does that too sometimes. No, it's not good for you. No. Secondly, I read this the other day. I don't remember where. God only gives himself totally, I think it was St. John of the Cross, to those who give themselves totally to him. Mary gave herself totally to God. So God gives himself totally to her and always grants her petitions. You think God would ever tell his mother no? But would she ever ask anything that would not be the will of God? And the great example of this is the wedding feast at Cana, huh? Think about it. Even though it wasn't time, Jesus said, Mother, what does this concern of yours have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. Mary just kind of like, not disrespectfully, of course, but she just kind of ignored him, right? And she just turned to the waiter, just do whatever he tells you, knowing that Mary wanted it, he was going to do it, period. That's it. And it's true, that's what happened, right? So if we are attached to anything, anything of this world, we're attached to it, money, possessions, prestige, fame, our own wills, our way of thinking, our way of acting, I want my way. We've not given ourselves totally to God, have we? So God will not give himself totally to us. Think about that. So we wonder sometimes, why did the saints, while they were on earth, and after in heaven, of course, why did God, they perform miracles? They've given themselves so totally to God, totally. So God answered their prayers. Our many technological successes and advances, along with our material prosperity, have swollen our heads and contributed to our number one vice, pride. It's pride that will keep people out of heaven, because it is pride that will keep people from admitting and confessing their sins. Remember, any sin can be forgiven. That is, any sin that is confessed. And those of you who are married, it's pride that causes most of the problems in marriage, huh? And other friendships and relationships. I want my way. I'm not going to admit I'm wrong. I'm not going to give him or her the satisfaction. You know what I'm talking about? Too many people are attached to their own will, their own ideas, their own way of doing things, and are often willing to hurt the ones they love rather than admit that they are wrong or submit to the will of another, even their spouses. Mary, Our Lady of Guadalupe, is the answer to our pride. She was supremely humble, huh? She responded to the angel Gabriel, I am the handmaid of the Lord. Ecce ancilla Domini, fiat mihi secundum verbum tuum. Don't get the idea that I know Latin very well. I just memorized that phrase. I know it pretty well. Be it done unto me according to your word. I'm just a handmaid of the Lord. As great as she was, the greatest human person who ever lived. Christ was a divine person with a human nature. The greatest human person who ever lived was also the humblest, huh? She was only a servant. Juan Diego, St. Juan Diego, we had his feast day on the 9th. Three times when she appeared, she called him humble. Humblest of my children, that's what she said. Humblest of my children, humblest of my sons. That's what she called him. That's why she picked him. When the bishop did not believe him, when he met Mary later on that day, this is what he told Mary. I kind of referenced it, but I beg you to entrust your message to someone more illustrious who might convey it in order that they may believe it, for I am only an insignificant man. It's like, you ever been to Montreal to pray at the shrine of St. Joseph? Big basilica over there. Joseph, Blessed André Bessette. Is it St. André or Blessed still? I think Blessed. Blessed, I think so. He performed so many miracles while he was living. And when people would tell, oh, I'm Blessed André. Not André Swallow. This is André Bessette. I'm not saying she's not saintly either, but I'm just saying this is different André. He would say, no, it's not me, it's St. Joseph. I'm just his little dog. So humble. Mary, the humblest of persons, and Juan Diego, a humble peasant, can help us to overcome our pride. Now it's an hour now, and I had a lot more I wanted to say, but I'm going to mention a couple of other things just for you to think about. Mary brings us great joy. Our Lady of Guadalupe, think of the joy she brought to Mexico and all of Central and South America, ending human sacrifice, huh? Bringing them the true faith, the knowledge of the truth and God. Mary brings joy because she brings Jesus. Huh? All true devotion to Mary leads us to Jesus, right? Listen to this. I have a quote here somewhere as I'm going to try to find that I found was so beautiful. Listen to this. Another saint, St. John Chrysostom. This refers to the visitation. Mary gone to see Elizabeth. The unborn John the Baptist cannot restrain his joy when the Lord is present, nor can he bear to wait for the normal interval of time to elapse. He tries to leap out from within the confines of the maternal womb in testimony to the Savior whose own arrival is imminent. Isn't that beautiful? He couldn't wait. He wanted to leap out of the womb. That's what John Chrysostom says. I'm going to conclude with this. The words of St. Bernard of Clairvaux. If the winds of temptation blow, let me repeat. If the winds of temptation blow, if you stumble when confronted by temptation, look to the star of the sea by calling out to Mary. If the waves of pride, ambition, or envy tug at your heart, call on Mary as well. If anger, avarice, or impurity imperil the course of your soul's journey, look to Mary. If you are disturbed by the memory of your sins, confused with the ugliness of your conscience, fearful in the face of judgment, or you begin to sink into the bottomless pit of sadness or into the abyss of despair, think of Mary. In every danger, moment of anguish or doubt, invoke Mary. May her name be ever on your lips and engraved on your heart too. Never stray from the example of her virtue so that you may always gain her help as an intercessor. You will not soon swerve from the path if you follow her, nor will you soon despair if you beseech her. You will never be lost if you think about her. With her taking you by the hand, you will not stay down in case of a fall. With her protection, you will have nothing at all to fear. You will not lose strength, for she is your guide. You will reach a safe haven happily if you count on her as your most intimate helper. May Almighty God bless you all, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you so much for being here and for... and for putting up with my hour-long rambling. May God bless you all. Anytime. Thank you. Is that it? We're finished. My pleasure. Great to be with all of you. Thank you for making the sacrifice of being here.
I just want to take the opportunity to thank Father Moro for coming back. Mermentau is not just down the road. So he did have to make a little bit of a trip to come here. And so I do thank him for that. Also, I did want to fill in just a couple of things. I love history. And you were talking about the Battle of Lepanto. It's a Don Juan of Austria. So Juan of Austria was the man who was in charge of the Christian fleet. And to further bring the connection over, which you probably knew about, is that on board his ship was a replica of Our Lady of Guadalupe that had been painted and touched to the tilma, expressly ordered to be brought over to Europe by the Pope. And so on board the commanding vessel at the Battle of Lepanto, which saved the Christian West, Our Lady of Guadalupe was there. She was there in image. And so there is this great idea that has come, that Father Moro touched on, that Our Lady can help us to evangelize and overcome Islam Fulton Sheen, hopefully Saint Fulton Sheen, has said that Mary is the key to the evangelization of Islam. And on the tilma, she stands on the crescent, which is also a symbol of Islam, crushing the crescent of Islam, that it could be seen that way. So Our Lady of Guadalupe, as Father Moro pointed out, is important in so many ways, continuing to be relevant in our society. I thank you for coming, and I thank all of you for showing up tonight.